This is episode 87 of the 99 Forever podcast. I'm Eric Friesen, and my guest tonight is making his debut on the podcast. He's an Oilers fan from Blackpool, England, who's currently visiting Edmonton, Russ Jericho. Russ, how's it going tonight?
I'm very well, thank you. Eric, how are you?
Oh, I'm great, man. Another late night recording, but I guess like as an Oilers fan, over in the UK, you're used to a lot of late nights.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So even with the latest games, say if it's a team like Anaheim, San Jose, LA, Vegas, even if they start at 8:30 over this way, then it's usually 3:30 a.m. my time. So,
yeah. And, you know, I'm one province over. So for most of the season, I'm about an hour later than Edmonton. So I'm used to some of those on the West Coast as well. And, you know, just off the top, before we dive into anything more, your Twitter handle, I'm wondering, is that an homage to pro wrestler Chris Jericho?
It is actually my surname. So,
oh, it is.
It is my surname. Yeah.
So it's not like you were a big wrestling fan and got into it because of him or anything.
I love wrestling too. So I do like wrestling. So
it just worked out that way. And of course, Chris Jericho is Canadian, and his dad, Ted Irvin played in the NHL back in
the
1960s.
That's right. So the LA Kings, the New York Rangers, and the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah. I mean, you're reading it almost like, you know, as a Hockey DB page off the top of your head.
And I think the Boston Bruins too, I think, very briefly. I think
I'm pretty sure it was
four NHL teams. It's definitely the Kings. It's definitely the Rangers, and it's definitely the Blues. I think it's the Bruins, but I wouldn't swear to it. So
that's impressive. I'm still, I think that's pretty cool. You got that off the top of your head, and you know, we're going to get into some Oilers talk right away. But since you are a wrestling fan, I'll just ask you: do you normally attend any live events when WWE comes to the UK? And
I can answer that. So they did the first ever live taping of SmackDown back in the UK in 2004, which was in Manchester, which is only really an hour and a half, 2 hours away from where I live in Blackpool. So I went to that back in October of 2004, which was really, really cool because I got to see Eddie Guerrero the year before he passed away. So that was awesome. And The Undertaker was actually on the show, despite the fact he wasn't actually shown on camera as well. So he was actually at the taping, but was never shown actually on the broadcast. So that was a pretty cool little tidbit. So
yeah, and you know, those mid-2000 wrestlers, that really was the era when I was most invested in WWE. It was when I was a teenager, and I mean, I still do keep an eye on it, but not as closely as I did 15 to 20 years ago. But yeah, it's just kind of always fun to talk about those wrestlers I watched growing up. And and, you know, one of the biggest wrestling events probably in the last 30 years would have been the SummerSlam.
SummerSlam 92, which was obviously held in the old Wembley Stadium and obviously in London. And then they did Clash at the Castle only you know, a few months back recently. So, but they did hold some NXT TakeOver events actually in Blackpool, and I actually went to both of them. So I actually got to see wrestlers he's gone for now, but he was Walter at the time, and Piper Niven, before they reverted her name back from being Doudrop and everything else, and Toni Storm and a bunch of other people. So it was really cool. I've actually got a picture on my phone of me snapping William Regal with Johnny Saint and Triple H from like a viewer's box. So,
oh, that's awesome, man. And back in 92, when they did hold SummerSlam at Wembley Stadium, the main event was obviously including a Canadian wrestling legend, Bret the Hitman Hart, who fought the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith. So were you following wrestling at that time in the early 90s, or was that even a little before your fandom?
No, not really. I started watching wrestling as of maybe 5-6 years old in 1991. So I was a little hulkster. I was a hulkster.
Okay.
It was at the time really where you were either a little hulkster or a little warrior. So you were either a fan of Hogan or you were a fan of the Ultimate Warrior. So yeah.
But still pretty cool for the WWE to hold that big of an event
in
the UK and have an English wrestler main eventing it too.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a real feel good moment for Davey Boy Smith and for his family as well. So
yeah, definitely. And you know, like I said, it's great to hear that you are a wrestling fan. I do want to find out more about your hockey fandom as well. And since you are a first time guest on the show, let's just start right from the beginning. When did you first get interested in hockey, and how did you become an Oilers fan living in England?
Yeah, so when we got a fifth TV channel back in the UK in 1997, a couple of years later, by 1999, they were showing late night sports on Channel 5. So they were showing things like football and baseball and hockey. So I was channel hopping one night. It was close to Christmas. I just finished finished school for the Christmas holidays and stuff. So I was up late one night. I was looking for something to watch to sort of help me drift off to sleep. And the hockey was on, and the team that we're playing with, the Edmonton Oilers. And I almost became fascinated with it right off the top of the bat. So that's how that really began. So
very cool. And I mean, hockey wouldn't be the number one sport in the UK. I think it's fair to say soccer is probably the number one sport in almost all European countries.
Absolutely.
But there is still a professional hockey league in England. Do you have a team over there as well, or are the Oilers mainly the only team you follow?
I actually don't watch any British hockey at all.
Okay.
So I only watch the NHL. So, and obviously when I do watch it, it's whoever the Oilers are playing against, so it's the Oilers against whoever they're playing that night. Sometimes I'll watch a game just because I want to fix, or because the playoffs are obviously on and I'm interested to see what teams are doing what and where they're going to go and everything else like that. But as far as British hockey is concerned, I don't really follow it. So no.
Fair enough. And when you first started following the NHL in the late 90s, this would have been still at a time when you weren't an adult and you were in school. So because of that, making it more difficult to watch games, was it harder to follow the Oilers through your teen years than it is, say, in maybe the last 10 to 15 years?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So I really only followed the Oilers with a passing interest. It's kind of funny that we talked about wrestling just a few minutes ago, because what tied me to Edmonton is that one of my favorite wrestlers at the time, it was Chris Benoit, and he was built from Edmonton for most of his career. And obviously, we can't really talk too much about Chris Benoit, but without it becoming some sort of debate, which is unfortunate. But other little things like that as well sort of brought ties back to Edmonton. So my favorite movies growing up when I was a kid were the Back to the Future movies. And obviously Michael Fox was born and raised in Edmonton.
Yeah.
So I was another Edmonton tie. So, and then I started doing some research on obviously the Stanley Cup and who won the Stanley Cup the year I was born in 1985. Well, it was the Edmonton Oilers. So, and I've said this in various interviews that I've ever given across whether it's the radio or to Oilers TV. I said, I didn't choose the Edmonton Oilers, and the Edmonton Oilers chose me.
Yeah.
And I genuinely believe that. So,
I mean, when you have that many connections, it's pretty hard to not just become an Oilers fan, right?
Exactly. It's pretty hard to ignore all those ties. So,
and I'm sort of the reverse for you, because I was an Oilers fan before I became like a really hardcore wrestling fan. And, so when I started to take more of an interest in WWE, let's say in the early to mid 2000s, sort of post Attitude Era, Chris Benoit was one of my favorite wrestlers, and it was just an added bonus that he happened to be from Edmonton, because that's obviously where my favorite team was, and close to my hometown in Saskatoon, only 5 hours away. So that was really, to see the world heavyweight champion, a guy who beat Triple H and Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania, the ultimate underdog after 18 years in the industry to finally reach the top of the mountain.
Yeah,
and it's so devastating how things ended. And like you said, it's hard to, like you said, get into it without it becoming a controversial topic, because obviously it was a double murder suicide that ultimately ended his life. And there has been cases that have come out, doctors that have said he had the brain of an 85-year-old man with Alzheimer's, and can't fully be held responsible for what he did. But still, when you take the lives of other people, it's hard for anyone to really feel for you in that scenario. But like, it is tough because unfortunately he'll never be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame.
No.
And based on his wrestling resume, he deserves to be, but ultimately they can't have the bad press that would come along.
No, absolutely not. No.
And even though the Triple H and Benoit were friends, it's just it's not one of those things that even now that he's taking basically running the company with Vince McMahon sort of stepping aside, it's going to be pretty much impossible for that to ever happen. That's unfortunate because, like I said, he was an all-time great wrestler.
Absolutely. No, I agree. I agree with the sentiment completely. And it's crazy as well, because here we are now, because it's officially March 23rd. And it's only now been just over 20 years
since WrestleMania 20. Since
WrestleMania 20 moment with him and Eddie Guerrero in the ring, you know, all the ticker tape falling from the roof of inside Madison Square Garden.
Such a great WrestleMania moment.
Yeah,
and it's a shame that moment basically never gets shown on WWE television anymore.
And a bunch of other things. So like the Royal Rumble match in 2001 against Chris Jericho the ladder match for the Intercontinental Championship. There's a great cage match with Kurt Angle on June the 11th, 2001, on Raw. There's also TLC 3, which is classed really as the forgotten TLC match purely because Chris Benoit is in it. And of course, obviously his Royal Rumble victory in 2004, which sent him on his way to winning the World Heavyweight Championship in the first place. And even the year before that. So
at 2003, he fought Kurt Angle for the WWE Championship.
Absolutely, yeah, which is another fantastic match and obviously a standing ovation as well. So it's a shame as far as obviously the wrestling accomplishments are concerned, first ballot, but for obviously, generally speaking, as a human being, it's marred with controversy, and it is what it is.
And that whole incident when he did die was the weekend that I graduated from high school. Here's my favorite wrestler and such like a pivotal moment, important moment in my teen years that are kind of forever linked together. So yeah, it was a tough time, but shifting gears back to hockey a little more now. So like you said, we talked about you starting to follow the team in the late 90s. Were some of your favorite Oilers players when you first started following the team, and why?
All right. So first of all, I think the first two players that grabbed my attention was Ryan Smith, because he just had that really solid blue collar work ethic. You know, was willing to go to the dirty areas. In front of the net, trying to get one in any way, shape, or form that he can, and just working in the corners and just trying to do anything he could to help his team win. You know, he was literally is defined as the heart and soul of the team, and he was at that point, and that had my attention almost immediately. And because obviously, like you said earlier, because obviously football or soccer, whatever you want to call it, has obviously such a big European following, and obviously it is England's national sport. One of the first things that made hockey exciting to me was the fact that fighting was legal within the game. So imagine me when I'm just watching someone like Georges Laroque on the ice, literally just throwing down the gloves and just hammering whoever it is that he needs to try and either make a statement for the team or to defend a teammate or anything like that. So those were the two real players that I noticed almost immediately that were instant fan favorites for me.
I mean, two great picks there. And absolutely. I think, I'm born in 1989, so a little bit younger than yourself. And anytime I talk to Oilers fans who are anywhere from, let's say, 5 years older than me to maybe even 10 years younger than me, Ryan Smith is a name that is commonly said for who their favorite player was growing up. And basically, for all the reasons you just listed, the Oilers have had some legendary players come through their organization over the past 45 years. Some of the most talented players to ever play the game: Wayne Gretzky, Jari Kurri, Mark Messier, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl. And as great as these players are, sometimes the players who really capture the imagination and just embody what the city of Edmonton stands for are the blue collar guys like Ryan Smith.
Absolutely. It's pretty much like, I think what Jack Michaels always says is that whenever he talked to Mike Smith about who's the player that he should watch, it was always Zach Hyman. Yeah, because I see a lot of Ryan Smith in Zach Hyman.
Everybody says that.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Ryan Smith will still end up having the better career than Zach Hyman. And part of that is because Ryan Smith was a regular NHL player by age 21 and contributing as a 30 goal scorer already at that point. Whereas Zach Hyman didn't really break into the league until he was 24, I believe. And even then he was sort of a bottom six player for the first couple of years of his career. Whereas Ryan Smith was really a top six guy almost from the start and basically was the Oilers franchise player for a good chunk of his time here. So like I said, do I think that Hyman is going to pass Smith for career value? No, but in terms of their peak performances, I think you could argue that Zach Hyman at his very best was probably a little better than Ryan Smith at his best. Still two similar players though in the way they play. And as for George LaRocque, though, I mean, there's another guy. You want to talk about the type of grinders and muckers and fighters who can sometimes be very popular players in this town. Well, he was a fourth line guy, didn't score a lot of goals, but just was such a character and such
character. That's what it's all about. You know, this city of characters too.
Yeah.
Another favorite player of mine that literally, maybe a couple of years removed from when I first started watching, again for almost a similar reason, because he had flashes of skill, but he could drop them whenever he wanted to. Was Mike Comrie. So another guy with a little bit of character. But yeah, as far as people like George go, some of my favorite character guys coming through in the past years are guys like Steve McIntyre or Clem Costin, you know, guys that have got a little bit of personality to them. And, you know, Oiler faithful love those sort of guys, you know, they may not have a whole lot of skill, but they've got a whole lot of character.
I mean, you look at whenever they bring back George LaRocque to events in Edmonton. Now he was just shown on the ice when they had the Black History Month night at the end of February.
Yeah.
And he got a standing ovation that you would think was reserved for a Hall of Fame type player. And
absolutely,
you have to remember, he was a fourth liner when he played here.
Yes,
so
he
this
was.
Is, yep. But he had something that the city of Edmonton loved. And I mean, if you want to go back to even another wrestling comparison, like he was the heavyweight champion of the NHL for probably 4 or 5 years there in the early to mid 2000s. And
oh yeah,
sometimes after a fight, the arena DJ would even play the Rock's entrance music.
It's awesome. Yeah. I briefly remember.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, he played parts of 8 seasons, I believe, in Edmonton's. And, you know, another even though he is mainly known for the fights he had, I believe he had 150 points in the NHL. So, you know, to make it 13 years in the league and still, you know, contribute, I guess, on average, probably, I mean, some years were better than others, but, you know, maybe in the 20-point range a lot of the time, the guy could still give you a little bit of offense, and it was very hard to knock off the puck. I can remember him scoring a couple big goals. That he even had a hat trick.
That's right. I've seen the videos, and then as he's watching playback, he still can't believe that he even did those things. So, yeah.
And of course, awesome. Even in a game when he had a hat trick, he also had a fight that night too.
That's right.
What do you remember about your first Oilers game? When was it? Who was it against? Any important details?
It's very vague. Like I said, it was close to Christmas 1999. I think it was against Dallas. I'm pretty sure it was Dallas. I think ties was still going on in the game by this point. I think it ended in
ties didn't come in until after the lock, or they were done after the lockout in 2005.
Right, yeah. So I'm pretty sure it ended in a tie. I'm pretty sure it was 2-2, but I wouldn't swear to it. I couldn't tell you exactly when the date was, but I'm pretty sure it was around Christmas time, 1999. We were playing Dallas.
That you, the first Oilers game you attended? Is this the first one you watched?
Oh, this was the first one I ever watched. So the first So the first game I ever attended was September 23rd, 2017. So I can get into a whole conversation about that. So,
so that would have been a preseason game then, if it, it was September.
It was a preseason game. It was my buddy Jeff, who I am currently staying with here in Sherwood Park. It was his 38th. It was his 38th birthday, and we played the Winnipeg Jets that night. We were actually wearing white, despite the fact we were at home, and we beat the Jets 6-2.
Okay. And, you know, sometimes I've come out to Edmonton for preseason games before, but the thing is that you don't always get to see all the main players. A lot of times it's prospects or guys on tryouts that are playing. Did you get to see most of the main crew by that point? Cause it was late September.
Actually we did. It was quite a pretty decent stacked lineup at that time. Cause, Cam Talbot was playing in net. I think Leon was playing, Darnell was playing, Connor was playing, Patrick Maroon was still with us at the time. He was playing, Jesse Puljujärvi, I think he scored a hat trick in this game. He was playing. And then there were other people like, I think Patrick Russell, Caleb Jones. I got shown on the Jumbotron, midway through the second period, cause it was my first game, just after Brad Malone took a penalty, just before a penalty was called on Brad Malone.
Okay.
Winnipeg had a penalty call for high sticking on Brad Malone, and they cut to me and they welcomed me to Rogers Place and everything like that. So that was a really cool moment. But yeah, I did get to see a fairly, you know, I'd say maybe an 80% of an NHL lineup by this point. So.
And, you know, whenever I've gone to Oilers games, I'll often see that, and they'll say it's this person's first NHL game and what country they're visiting from.
That's right.
I'm curious, because I've never known this. How did that actually come about? How did you get in contact with the organization to allow that to happen?
I kind of went about it two ways. I think I contacted them on Facebook, and I also contacted them on Twitter. And I said, look, this is going to be my first NHL game. Is there anything that you can do? I don't think I actually got a response. But
I was just going to ask, did they even respond back to you?
The message was read. I definitely know that. And then obviously there it was. And they sent a cameraman up to where we were sat at the time. And I said, well, is this for what I think it is? And obviously he nodded. And then once the penalty assessed to Winnipeg was done, they cut to me. And obviously, yeah, they said, welcome, Russ Jericho, joining us all the way from England. Welcome to Rogers Place, and I hope you have a great night. And I've got the video somewhere.
Oh, I'm glad that you do have a video of it, too. Did you think this was actually going to happen, though?
Yeah, I got the video of the whole game as well, so that's actually at home. So, but yeah, it's on YouTube, and every single North American sports broadcast of the game that I've been to so far, I've been on it. So,
oh wow!
So I'm 4-for-4 right now.
That's pretty impressive. And did you think that they would actually get back to you, or were you just kind of throwing out a hope?
I was just kind of hoping, but sure enough, they did. And I was very pumped that night, because it was really Jeff's birthday. But I was the star of the show. I don't.
you kind of stole the limelight from him that
night.
Well, he
was sat next to me too. So he's been one of my loudest supporters for many years now. So he was just happy to sort of live that moment through me, and we're still fondly talked about even to this day. So
that's awesome, man. And I was going to ask, so the building had been open for about a year by that point. What were your first impressions of Rogers Place back in 2017?
Oh, it was awesome. It was such a welcome sort of environment, because I actually just managed during my first visit here, because I managed to get a first visit here in April of 16, just before they started moving things out of Rexall Place and downtown. So I actually did manage to get a photo with the Wayne Gretzky statue.
While it was still at Northlands.
Whilst it was still at Northlands, just before it was being moved down. But
I made sure to get one too, right at the end. I mean, I've had several pictures throughout my life in front of the statue when it was at the old building, but Ian, I guess it would have been March of 2016 for me. That was my last Oilers game at Rexall Place, so I wanted to make sure I got one in front of the building while the Gretzky statue was still there one last time.
Yeah, no, yeah, and to go into the building for the very first time, it gave me chills, it gave me goosebumps. I remember how nervous I was on the day of the game because it's almost like, you know, you want to shower, you want to brush your teeth, you want to put as much mouthwash in as you can, because it's like trying to impress a girl that you're going out with on the first date. You just want to look your best for
the moment. Such, yeah.
Yeah. And obviously when I was here in April 16, they were obviously still building the arena. So it was nice to finally A, be in it, and then B, before going in, just seeing how things had changed in the time that I'd been away. And so I'd probably been here on my first two visits to Edmonton, probably during, you know, probably some of the most crucial 18 months in Edmonton Oilers history when you think about it, as far as the building's concerned, and obviously the direction of which your franchise is heading in at this time. So,
when you look back to those first couple visits to Edmonton, the one you go to, this historic building where the Oilers won four Stanley Cups and where they set countless NHL records, and on the other hand, you go to this new state-of-the-art building in downtown Edmonton. What was the more memorable experience for you of the two?
The look around Rexall came about from a friend who was able to arrange it with somebody he knew that worked with Northlands at the time. So most of the things had already started being moved out. So there was no ice surface. The plexiglass had already been taken down. The netting had already gone because they started sending it away to be framed and things for memorabilia. But
people were buying their seats.
Yeah, exactly as well. Yeah. But the banners and things were still there, and to be able to see, some of the most oddest and random things, like a coat hanger that had Jack Michael's name written on it in Sharpie and stuff, just gave me chills to know that obviously that this is a building with a lot of history, and it was somewhere that I had always dreamed of being able to one day see the Oilers play, but sadly never get the chance to. But know how fortunate it was that I was able to see it almost in situ before everything was being moved away, and obviously to get the photo of the statue outside as well was pretty priceless, because obviously the promotional stuff for Rexall was still outside the building too. But and then to compare it to obviously this obviously new state-of-the-art facility where I certainly do hope that there are going to be more memories made there with more Stanley Cups in the franchise's history. And to know now that when it's a question of when for me, not if, when that happens, I will have been in this building at one point, wishing, hoping, and cheering them on is just I love them both. I couldn't tell you which one of them was my favorite. I think I love them equally, because
love them for different reasons too, right?
But, because I love one for what it is, what it's done, what it means. I love one for what it is and what it will be and what it can be and what it could be and what it should be. I couldn't give you a preference as to one over the other. I love them both. It's great that we've got a new facility, and hopefully it means more because of the downtown, you know, downtown area has been revitalized.
It needed it so badly.
Fantastic. Oh yeah. Ice District looks fantastic as well. And I'm hoping at some point, Gary Bettman will give us the All-Star game that we've been so long, you know, so
maybe
long
in 2027.
You know, yeah. Clamoring for and everything else.
I mean, they definitely deserve to have one, and the Oilers haven't hosted an NHL All-Star game since January of 1989, which is the month I was born. The All-Star game was about 2 months or 2 weeks after I was born, actually. So it's been a long time, and you'd think that now that Ice District is complete, that they would get the next one. I know the Islanders will be hosting the next All-Star game. I'm still surprised they're going to have one in 2026, considering that it's also an Olympic year. I guess they're going to try to combine it all in there. It'll be an extended break, though, because they're going to have to shut the league down for at least 3 weeks to have the Olympics.
That's right, yeah.
And then when you factor in that they're going to have an All-Star game before that, I mean, they could be playing until late June that year, so it's going to be a long season. And then next year, I guess that they have decided to not have one due to the Four Nations face-off that will be next February. I'm really looking forward to that as well. But yeah, let's hope absolutely. That we do see an All-Star game in Edmonton eventually. And, you know, I'll sort of just echo your thoughts as well on the two buildings, because any Oilers fans who got to experience a game at Rexall, there's so many memories there. I mean, I'll never forget my first game in 2006 when the Oilers took on the Flames. And just going there over the years was always something that I looked forward to. Just getting to see watch my favorite team for one, but also to be in this building where so much history was made. The house that Gretzky built, and anyone who knows me knows that Wayne Gretzky is my ultimate hero. And let's just hope that Rogers Place, which is the house that Connor built, will have some championships as well.
Absolutely.
And you've mentioned that you've been to Edmonton a couple times before. Were those only your two other previous trips before this one?
Yes, that's right.
So you haven't been back since 2017?
No, I haven't. No.
So how many Oilers games have you been to in your life? And even on this trip, how many games are you planning to attend while you're here?
Right. Okay. So I went to the one game at my last trip, which was obviously a preseason game. So whilst I'm here, I'm planning on seeing four games of now, which I've seen two. So the game against the Penguins, which was on March the 3rd, was my first ever regular season Oilers game. And obviously we played that game and we won 6-1. So which was a great way to get started on this trip. The funny thing about that was is that when I originally booked this trip in the first place, I wasn't supposed to be arriving until the day of that game. And then Christmas Day came and I said, you know what, I'm going to just change my trip and arrive 4 days earlier, because it was only supposed to be 5.5 weeks. So then I changed it to 6 weeks, because it was just a Wednesday to a Wednesday, which made things in my mind a lot easier. And to say that I was arriving in February sounded a lot closer by than arriving in March. So yeah. Instead of landing and listening to the Penguins game, I ended up arriving 4 days earlier whilst we're playing St. Louis, and going to the Penguins game four days later, which was awesome. So that was game number one of four whilst I'm here. I attended the St. Patrick's Day theme game against Colorado, which was obviously last Saturday. And we came out on the losing end of that 2-1. Coming away from, you know, a half a second left.
Still in overtime, got a point, right?
So absolutely, yeah. So we got a point out of it. I wasn't disappointed, because it meant for me that I got to see, my first ever live fight. So it was Vinny Desharnais against Josh Manson. And obviously Desharnais broke his finger in that tilt. And then obviously I got to see my very first overtime too, which was, you know, awesome. An awesome experience either way. You could say about the result, you know, was the officiating for the game against Colorado, as you know, you could talk about that all day long, but the experience was great. We knew what we were up against, because it was a team that obviously eliminated the Oilers from the playoffs the season before last, on their way to their Stanley Cup victory. So we knew it was a heavyweight battle. So the fact that we came out of it with a point, you know, I'll take that all day long. So,
and the Oilers played them well, and let's not forget they had a 2-1 lead with about 8 minutes to go in that game.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, we did. Yeah, exactly.
There was a good scoring chance. I think it was Evander Kane who had a really good scoring chance just before Colorado ended up tying it up. So it easily could have been 3-1. Unfortunately, like we said, they came out on the losing end in overtime, but they're still currently on a 6-game point streak right now. And ever since they kind of got out of that funk in mid-February, the results have been very strong for the Oilers. So they're gearing up just at the right time. And you would have got to see a pretty decisive victory against the Penguins as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we did. So I think as far as since arriving here is concerned, the only game of which we haven't actually come away with a point at all, I think, was a game against Columbus. So every other game that we've played since I've been here, we've either gotten a point by either losing in overtime or winning outright. So we played the Blues as I was waiting for my flight to Edmonton whilst I was at Vancouver Airport. So I let out the loudest play La Bamba Baby, the gate 19 at Vancouver Airport had ever heard in their life, when Connor scored the overtime winning goal. And then arriving after that, we played, was it Seattle on the Saturday?
Yeah.
And I hit the streets with Jeff around Sherwood Park in minus 31 degrees temperature, going cheering, wearing our jerseys, waving our flags. And obviously we won that game. And then the day after that was the Penguins game. And the momentum really just kept building and building and building. So the next game we've got lined up is March 30th against Anaheim. So we're actually going to Great Falls for spring break, and that starts about 9 o'clock this morning. So we're on the road from 9 o'clock this morning, and we're staying in Drumheller overnight over on Saturday night. Sunday morning we're starting afresh and making our way to Great Falls for 4 days. So that's pretty exciting. And after we come back, game four and the final game of my stay whilst I'm here is the Battle of Alberta at the Saddle Dome, in which we're basing ourselves out of Banff for that last week.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I'm sure you're going to love Banff, and I'm glad that you're getting to kind of explore and do a few different things while you're here. So is Jeff your only really close contact in Edmonton, or do you know some other Oilers fans around town just from either meeting on Twitter, or how do you even have this connection with him?
Yeah, so yeah, mostly Facebook groups and Twitter of how I've made these connections with people. So there've been a lot of people mostly on Facebook that I've made friends with over the years. So I'll give a shout out to my buddy Dennis. He was one half of the Oil Troopers. He used to dress wearing his Star Wars Stormtrooper gear and helmet with an Oilers flag as a cape. And I made quite close friends with him. This was back in as early as 2012, maybe even 2011, as early as that. Another friend I have, she's called Amanda. I've known her since 2013. So it's a small circle of people that I met in Facebook groups, but I have to give a shout out to just how friendly and welcoming and warm Canadians are, because you guys rock, you really do. I'm just a little old nobody from Blackpool, but I come here and I'm made to feel like a king, and it's really fantastic, and it's a testament to just how nice everybody is here. So I can't thank everybody enough.
Oh, for sure. And you know, the other thing too is that the Oilers, even though it is a smaller fan base compared to some of the larger cities around the league, it's an extremely passionate fan base and a welcoming fan base too. So, you know, regardless of where you're from around the world, Oilers fans basically, you know, welcome you as our own, because I've had fans on this podcast from several different countries, Brazil, Australia, Germany, Sweden, England. You're actually the third English Oilers fan that I've had on this podcast. Do you even know any other Oilers fans in the UK?
Well, I had spoken with Jack a little bit. So prior to him arriving here, he and I had gotten connected on Twitter, and we spoke back and forth about what his plans were and what my plans were, and whether there were a possibility of us crossing paths. I know a couple of other fans that are from the UK too. At least two, three, maybe four people that I know of that are on my Facebook that I know are obviously British based Oilers fans, and I got connected with Brandon, you know, via his story as well when he was here visiting, also with Dukes, Sam Miller, obviously who's from Australia.
Brandon was just the last guest on my podcast before
amazing.
You.
Amazing. Yeah, no, it was amazing to follow his story and Brandon's story, obviously, and his wife, Shia's story as well, and just live vicariously through their eyes. And I was really kind of hoping that when it was my turn to arrive, I'd just carry on, you know, the good work that they'd already set and do everything almost in the same way as they would. And you know, write my own little love letter to the city and just live the best life imaginable for the time that I'm here in the 6 weeks. And if it means that you turn some people's eyes on to going, you know what, I'm going to give Canada a try, I'm going to give Alberta a try, I'm going to give Edmonton a try, then that's my job well done.
Oh, without a doubt. And I guess the other thing is too, you did mention how you were on the Jumbotron at Rogers Place back in 2017. You were also included in a Oilers video on Twitter. They might have shown it on all their social media platforms, actually. I don't know for sure.
They did.
Called Oilers Fans Around the World. And you were in this video. Can you just kind of explain how that video came to be?
Yeah. So again, it was during the playoffs. And we were playing the Kings at the time, so it was the first round. And I got a random DM in my on my Twitter from Jessica Kent, who obviously works for Oilers TV, and she's saying, "Hi Russ, I'm Jessica, and I work for you. I'm thinking about doing a piece on international Oilers fans for the obviously, you know, follow the team from abroad. Would this be something that you were interested in doing? Because usually what the Edmonton Oilers do around this time, especially during the playoffs, is that they do their hashtag Oilers roll call, and they want to know where people are checking in from the world watching the team. And obviously, for every single game, I didn't miss one a single time. Is obviously checking in. It's 3:30 a.m. from Blackpool, England, or wherever. And obviously, they were clearly looking through these check-ins to see who would be some, probably, you know, some of the more, you know, interesting stories to feature. And I was honored and privileged to be one of those chosen to represent the Edmonton Oilers from the United Kingdom and from England. So it was a deep honor, a great pleasure to record and to talk with Jessica. And I'm hoping at some point before I have to go back, I can meet with her and personally thank her for selecting me for, you know, such an amazing honor, because the video went onto the Oilers YouTube channel. It was obviously shown on Twitter. It was shown on their Facebook. And it was everywhere that they could put it, and it made a little old nobody from England feel like $1 million.
Well, I don't think you're a nobody, man. But honestly, like, that's very cool that you got to be a part of that, and that they reached out to you. I think I saw you recently shared it again, because I don't think I saw it the first time when it was actually posted last spring. But funny enough, I actually used to work with Jessica Kent back when she was a reporter here in she was the anchor. I was a digital reporter here at Global Saskatoon. So that was about 10 years ago. And, you know, cool to see that now she's moved on to work for the Oilers, and that you got to have a chance to have that conversation with her. So I guess it's a small world, isn't it?
Oh yeah. No, yeah. She's an absolute delight. It was such a pleasure to just even have a few minutes just before even recording it, and just knowing what was going to be, you know, what she was looking for, and just getting to know a little bit about her as well. Just an absolute delight. Just a pleasure. I'm thinking about how special it was that of all the people that they could have asked, that, you know, they asked me, and it's a moment in life that I'll always be proud of, and it's something that's also on there for my kids to see whenever they want to watch it as well.
Of course. And just, what is your all-time favorite memory of watching the Oilers?
So we talked about how difficult it was back then to compare with now as to how things have changed in the last few years as far as technology is concerned, and being able to watch games and stream games. So it was watching the Oilers was done with more of a passing interest up until probably the beginning of about 2009. And obviously at this time, we were currently mired in the decade of darkness.
Yeah, I mean, there was the 2006 Cup run, but other than that, you know, it was some pretty lean years.
That's right. Yeah. So trying to think about a highlight during, you know, as several years of lowlights, is extremely tough. But I managed to narrow down to maybe two or three, and I came up with.
Give me your best two or three.
Right. So one of the best ones was obviously the trade with LA that sent Colin Fraser to Los Angeles in exchange for Ryan Smith, which brought Smitty back home. And then Smitty played out his final years here, and obviously on his last game he was named the captain, which I thought personally was way long overdue.
And it was a really, nice really touch, nice. And he deserved to go out that
absolutely.
way.
And it was really nice of obviously the captain at the time, which was Andrew Ferens, to do that for Smitty. Another great memory is the fact that, you know, like an organizational turnaround, because from the moment we drafted Connor, the moment we decided, you know, we announced we were going to draft Connor McDavid, you know, there was a massive shift in organizational structure, and obviously Craig McTavish was moved out as GM, and Peter Chiarelli came in, and Bob Nicholson came in, and you know, the focus was to literally make sure we had, you know, competent managers. I'm not saying that they weren't competent before, but to make sure we were building a winning culture, because we're getting a generational player, you know, not just an elite player. We're talking about a franchise player. And then one of my favorite moments is the fact that after 11 years, we were confirmed to be making our return to the playoffs after 11 years of being on the outside. And
I remember that game when they beat the Kings in 2017. Right. I think there was about 6 games left in the regular season, and that clinched a playoff spot.
Yeah,
so.
It was something like that. And then the series against San Jose, and I remember it was 6:30 in the morning. It went to overtime, and when David Desharnais scored the overtime goal, I screamed my house down at 6:30 in the morning, and I woke everybody in my house up, which wasn't too bad anyway, because my kids had to be up for school. Their arms were going to go off to wake them up for school within the next.
Might have been a rough day at work for you.
because I'm a graphic designer, it's freelance. I can sort of work whenever
you can sort of work your own hours, right?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Yeah, but that moment, you know, and that moment, and obviously Oscar Klefbom scoring like the first goal in Oilers playoff history, and you know, like the last 11 years as well, is something that really sort of stand out in my mind.
Yeah, those are all really strong memories that I have as well, and I think that if you talk to any Oilers fan who has followed the last decade or so, that those would be ones that would instantly come to mind. I think I'd, from an on ice perspective, for me personally, probably the best moment they've had since the 06 Cup run was McDavid's overtime winner in the 2022 Calgary playoffs to eliminate the Flames. Yeah.
Calgary. Yeah. Another great moment from that series is when Lucic ran into Mike Smith, and obviously Mike Smith went out to obviously concussion protocol, and obviously the video was Stone Cold Steve Austin's theme music.
We're gonna bring it back to wrestling again. It was a very WWE-esque entrance, wasn't it?
Hell yeah, it was. Hell yeah, it was awesome.
You include the Stone Cold Steve Austin glass breaking music, and it just fits so perfectly.
It did. It really did.
Oh, man, that's great. Well, I mean, look, we obviously follow each other on Twitter, and I often see you posting pictures in different Oilers jerseys, and you had a great one in front of the Stanley Cup statue near United Cycle recently that I think you blew up and turned into a framed photo, if I'm not mistaken, that I saw you post. I'm a jersey collector myself. I just want to know, how many Oilers jerseys do you have, and how many did you bring with you to Edmonton?
Yeah, so this was I had to really think about this, because I'm trying to envisage my closet, which is about 6,500 kilometers away right now. So I think when I counted them all in total, I own 20 Oilers jerseys, and 10 of them are here. So I brought with me. The current Adidas home, away, the alternate, reverse retro 2, one of my Heritage Classic jerseys.
I still need to get one of those, and I'm coming back to Edmonton next month, so I'm going to be on the hunt to try and find one.
It's like gold dust. They're very, very hard to find. So I came with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I think I came with five of the current Adidas jerseys. I came with the farewell Rexall jersey, or the 2015-2017 Reebok Edge orange jersey. You know,
with the patch, jersey. Yeah.
With the patch, yeah. I came with one of the old Reebok home jerseys as well, which actually has my dad's name and number on the back of it.
Oh, that's cool.
It's because of his passing away, actually, that I was actually able to fund this trip in the manner of which I've been able to do it. So I brought his jersey with me as a memento, and that I will be carrying his spirit with me. So because without him, really, not much of this would be possible. But thank you. And it'll be coming with me to the US as well, so he'll be with me wherever it goes. And so I own 20. 10 of them are here. I've bought one whilst I've been here, which is the Hockey Fights Cancer jersey, and I bought from Pro Am Sports. And Jeff had sourced me two in the time I was waiting to arrive here, which was the first reverse retro jersey, which is currently actually away for being recrested.
That was always tough to find too. I wish I would have grabbed that one a couple of years ago.
Too. Yeah. Again, that was a rare eBay find, and I had to do some serious negotiating to try and get it for a reasonable price. It's like I said, it's gone away to Elite Sports Promo Marketing to be requested because it had like the plastic numbers on it. So I wanted to get them with the proper twill. Yeah, absolutely. And then, the St. Patrick's Day jersey as well from,
and I think I saw you wearing that to one of the games recently too.
That's right. That would have been last Saturday's game against the Avalanche because obviously it was themed. So we ditched the blue and orange in favor of green that night. So
yeah, no, it was a perfect timing to get to wear that one. And I'm glad that you're able to bring all these because, you know, for the photo gallery that you've been making on this trip to Edmonton, you've had no shortage of wardrobe to wear.
Absolutely. Well, I always feel like I have to dress appropriately for whatever event calls for. So I'd always like to think that using what I know from being a designer, I have a little bit of an eye for accessorizing. I should know how to accessorize because if I don't, I wouldn't make work for much of an artist.
Definitely. And I mean, you've posted so many great pictures on this trip, much like Brandon
did when he
came up here from Illinois. I love to see everything that you've all your journey through Edmonton so far. That picture of you and Jeff in front of the Stanley Cup, though, your favorite one so far?
Oh, without a doubt. We loved it so much. Obviously, yeah, we had a frame made of it. It was ordered almost the day after we received the file from Jody, who handles United Sport and Cycle social media. He's a photographer by trade, and he said he'd been waiting for a moment to capture the Stanley Cup in a meaningful way. And he thought that Jeff and I were the perfect story to do that. So he sent us the file. We went to Michael's the very, very next day. We said we'd like this. We'd want it to be done on some of the very, very best, you know, the best form of canvas that you can find. And they recommended like a gloss steel, print. And Jeff received a call today to say it was ready. Within 5 minutes, we wasted no time and we went there and we saw it and we were just in awe of what.
Yeah, it looked like it turned out great. And,
absolutely.
Capturing that moment must have been right up there, like with some of the Oilers videos and Jumbotron that you've been included in. It must be like a core memory for you in your time as an Oilers fan.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, we'd always said to each other during the trip and even before, you know, what's going to be the defining moment of this whole entire thing? And I said, I don't know, but when it happens, we'll know. And that day, I think we managed to do it. It was a crazy day as well because we started that Friday traveling to one of the Mighty Millions Lottery show homes to do a radio interview with 630 Chad, and then we went to United Cycle. So it was a busy day, but it was a really fun day because that's, you know, the magic happened, and that was only March of thirst, and I'd only been here for about 2 days at this point, and we'd already managed to find the photo that might define this whole trip within the first 2 days, which was crazy. So,
well, I'm glad you got to do that. It'll be a tough one to top unless maybe McDavid gets 9 or 10 points in a game or something like that.
He's getting so close now to getting his 100th assist, and you know, he's just a generational talent, phenomenal player, amazing to watch live. You know, you think he's fast when you watch him on TV. You know, we wait till you see him in person. It's just, you can't believe your eyes sometimes. It's absolutely phenomenal. And you know, if anybody deserves a Stanley Cup in their career, he should have one, you know. So it happened eventually for Alex Ovechkin. He had to wait 13 years. I'm hoping it's not that long for Connor, and I hope he can get one for us really soon. So yeah, he's close to 100 assists. I'd love to see it. It's up there with some of his other great achievements, you know, the Hart, the Rocket Richard, all of it. He finds ways to defy belief every year. Just when you think you've seen it all from Connor McDavid, there's always something else. And I think Chris Knobloch said it better, is that he can't be surprised anymore to hear, oh, did you know that Connor McDavid did this? And he can't be surprised anymore. So no, I think that speaks for itself.
All right, let's dive into a little more Oilers talk now. And Edmonton Oilers wrapped up their four-game homestand with an 8-3 come-from-behind win over the Buffalo Sabres last night at Rogers Place. The Oilers are now 9-1-2 in their last 12 games. 12 different Oilers players had a point in the victory as well. And Connor McDavid turned in another outstanding performance last night, picking up 4 assists in the win. McDavid currently leads the league with 86 assists this season, and he now just needs 14 assists in the final 15 games to join the NHL's legendary 100 assist club. Russ, you alluded to this just a second ago. Do you think McDavid will reach 100 assists this season, and where would you rank that amongst his most impressive achievements in the NHL?
Oh, it's up there with some of his greatest stuff, you know, a Hart Trophy winner, Rocket Richard, you know, win an all-star almost every single season he plays, you know, Ted Lindsay, all that stuff. It's got to be up there with some of his greatest achievements. As far as every season is concerned, it's almost as if Connor McDavid wants to try his hand at doing something else a little bit differently, just sort of show off that he can be a complete all-round player rather than just be known as just obviously he's a very skilled passer anyway, but he wants to, you know, make his game look a little bit more well-rounded, so it doesn't look like, you know, it's a one-man show or a two-man show. Do I think he can do it? Well, I certainly wouldn't bet against it. I think you'd be a fool to bet against it, knowing that it's only 15 with 14 games to go, whichever way around that is. I certainly wouldn't bet against it. It's far easier to get assists in the game, I would think, than it is goals. For every goal that's scored, you can have a primary and a secondary assist. So I think, you know, piling up the apples is a lot easier than necessarily banging them in the back of the net. So I wouldn't bet against it, certainly not.
Yeah, I mean, year after year, McDavid really continues to push the boundaries of what's possible on the ice. You look at last season, he sets his sights on scoring 60 goals, and he did it. He became just the 6th player in NHL history to record 150 points in a single season, and he was also only the 5th player to ever lead the league in goals, assists, and points in a single season. So when you look at that, he's such a well-rounded offensive machine that he's equally dangerous as a goal scorer and a playmaker. And then this season, he's been really more focused on setting up his teammates than putting the puck in the net himself. McDavid has 41 points in his last 19 games, and 36 of those 41 points are assists. He's already joined Wayne Gretzky as the only players in NHL history to record 8 consecutive 60 assist seasons. He joined Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, Bobby Orr, and Paul Coffey as the only players in NHL history with 6 70 assist seasons. And then he recently became the first player to record consecutive 80 assist seasons since Joe Thornton in 2005-2006 and 2006-2007 as well. And McDavid should hit the 90 assist mark before the end of this month, which would make him the first player to do that since Thornton in 2006-2007 as well. And then it's just the pursuit of 100 assists after that, and I'm convinced that he will hit the century mark. I actually made that a prediction on this podcast back in October that McDavid would have 100 assists this season, and he will then join Gretzky, Lemieux, and Orr, who most fans regard as the 3 greatest players of all time, as the only members of the 100 assist club. And McDavid would be the first player to reach that milestone since 1990-91, so when we were both very young. It really hasn't been done in over 33 years. So We're talking about the first time in multiple generations that any fans will have seen this happen. And he's on pace for 106 assists in 80 games this season. But if he can have a couple more games like last night down the stretch, I mean, he's got games against Anaheim, San Jose, Arizona, some of the weaker teams in the Western Conference. And, you know, he might have a shot at 110 even.
Yeah, no, as every possibility. If there's one word that I could ever use to really describe Connor McDavid effectively, I would say it's otherworldly. What he can do is just absolutely it's you know
extraordinary, almost, otherworldly. You know, just there's so many different things you could say about the guy. I mean, probably the most advanced player we've ever seen, or most evolved. Just every skill he has is elite. And as we talked about, he proved last year that he can score 60 goals in this league. He was challenged to do that by Leon Draisaitl, and he ended up doing it. I think that if he was healthy all year, he would have hit 150 points again this season, which would have made him only the third player ever to have consecutive 150-point seasons. I knew that he would do it at least once in his career. I felt very sure. And then once he hit it last year, now I feel convinced that he's going to do it again. And I mean, you look at how some of the elite players in the league are able to stay at the top of their game longer than ever because of sports science and the advancements in equipment and nutrition and training.
Absolutely.
I mean, I originally thought that McDavid will have about 5 years where he'll be 120 or better. Now I think there will be 5 or 6 years where he's 130 points or better, including this year.
Oh, absolutely. How do I even put this? I mean, everything he does almost every season is just finds new ways to, you know, even if you're not an Oilers fan, he'll make a believer out of the most, you know, the staunch non-believer, the skeptics, with what he can, what he is capable of doing, and just how much of a franchise leading powerhouse that he is, and how he drives his team forward and makes everybody that plays around him better. He's just a phenomenal player, a delight to watch, and we are, you know, we're blessed to have him on our team. So,
and let's not forget that he's still in the Art Ross Trophy race now, because he did miss those two games in October because of the injury. You know, it set him back a little bit, and then it took him a while to get up to speed again in November. You could tell that he was playing hurt for a while, and he actually fell below a point per game for the first time since his rookie season. And that's when I knew that something was off with him, because there is no way a healthy Connor McDavid in his prime is going five games with only getting 1 point. There was something off there. And he really started to turn it around after American Thanksgiving. And from then on, when he had that 4-assist game in against the Washington Capitals, it's just been like he's been over 2 points per game since then, and he's just looked like McDavid again. And I mean, look, he had 4 assists last game. That's his 5th 4-assist game of the season. And I mean, he really is a play driving machine. He creates more offense than anyone else in the league. And while McDavid has been racking up the assists, Zach Hyman has been filling the net. Hyman scored 2 more goals last night, giving him 48 on the season. He's also just 3 goals away from 200 in his career. And Hyman has continued to improve since signing in Edmonton in the summer of 2021. Russ, even after scoring 37 goals a year ago, could you have ever imagined that Hyman would be knocking on the door of 50 goals this season?
You know, absolutely not. But I'm glad he has, because the goal scoring production decline from, say, players like Connor and even Leon and even Nuge from last season past, somebody's had to really sort of, like, you know, pick up the workload, and you know, Zach's been the guy to do that, and it's crazy as well to know that how close he is to having 50. Well, if we think about how many of those goals that he had were really were potentially good goals that that fell by the wayside against this for being offside or disallowed or kicked in or what have you. Just how where we would be or if some of those had counted already. So just a phenomenal value contract. Big shout out to editor and Leaf, who always said, "Oh, you're forgetting one thing." The Hyman contract is quite possibly the worst thing ever. And well, it doesn't look that way now, does it? But so,
no, I mean, and look, I think that he has exceeded all expectations since coming here. When the Oilers signed Zach Hyman, I was hoping he would be a guy who could score 25 to 30 goals and be a regular contributor on McDavid's wing. And they were getting him for a fairly value contract at $5.5 million. Could say that maybe the points that he had put up to that point weren't worthy of it because he only had a 41-point season. That was his career best. Look how he's continued to just get better and better. Maybe he's going to be one of those players like a Blake Wheeler or a Joe Pavelski who's actually better in their early 30s than he was in their 20s. And Hyman really couldn't have asked for a better opportunity than to play alongside the best player in the world. And while Hyman does benefit from playing with McDavid, scoring 50 goals isn't easy, and it's not a lock just because you play on McDavid's wing that you're going to do that. I think he also deserves a lot of credit for the season he's had. I mean, he has a real nose for the net, and he's great at finding loose pucks and tight and burying them, much like Ryan Smith was.
Yep.
But he also has a knack for tipping pucks. We saw that on his first goal last night, and he has an underrated release on his shot that can beat goalies, as we saw in his second goal last night. And the fact that he's having a career year at age 31 is even more remarkable. Earlier in the season, he was on pace for 50 goals, but I think most Oilers fans would have been thrilled just to see him hit 40. But now no doubt that he's going to get 50. I mean, he only needs 2 goals in the last 15 games, so it's not even like there's much drama in it. Oh, is it going to happen?
No.
Like, everyone is sure it's going to happen. And there's an outside chance he could even still get 60. And like we said, if we think about McDavid potentially getting 100 assists and Hyman as his primary target on that top line, it's very likely that if Connor gets 100 assists, he could get Zach close to 60 goals as well. And tomorrow night, the Oilers will be in Toronto to take on the Maple Leafs. I guess it's actually today since we're after midnight now. And Hyman will have the opportunity to record his first 50-goal season in his hometown against his former team. Russ, how sweet would that be to watch Hyman score his 50th goal of the season in Toronto on Hockey Night in Canada?
Poetic justice, because I think it would be a great storytelling moment for Zach and his family, because obviously they're all living there, obviously against his former team in his hometown. It would also make up for the fact that he was
robbed of an All-Star game.
Unjustly looked over in the All-Star game. I don't know how the NHL decide the selection procedures for that, but I'd actually like to request a written explanation if it was possible.
The voting process,
how is it that someone like a Kyle Connor and a Vincent Trocheck get to go to the All-Star game, but Zach Hyman doesn't? Explain that to me, please.
You know, there were a lot of years when the Oilers didn't have a representative at the All-Star game, and that's because at that time they just sent whoever the league selected as the NHL All-Stars. Not every team had to send a representative. And now we're at a point where every NHL team does need to be represented at the All-Star game.
Yep.
And you're seeing some teams who have a player that might not deserve to be there, but gets there because, oh, we have to have a player from all 32 teams there. And sometimes a player like Zach Hyman gets left out, a guy who's going to have a 50-goal season. And I just thought, look, McDavid and Draisaitl have been to the All-Star game many times before. They're going to go many times again in the future.
Exactly.
But this was going to be probably the one opportunity Hyman will have. And there's no All-Star game next year, too, so it just pushes it further down the line. And the fact that the All-Star game was in his hometown and that he was having this outstanding goal-scoring season, he deserved to be there. And it's like four Vancouver Canucks players are there and 4 Toronto Maple Leafs players there. It really turns into a popularity contest at this point where players are getting voted in, because the NHL does select the starters. And then beyond that and the captains, it kind of goes to the fan vote. So, I mean, Were there guys who got to go to the game that were less deserving than Zach Hyman? Absolutely. I don't think he's going to lose too much sleep over it if the Oilers end up winning the Stanley Cup, which is the only thing he's really focused on this season. But that would have still been a career highlight for him to actually get to play in the NHL All-Star Game in his hometown. And I'm disappointed for him that he didn't get to do that.
Yeah, me too. And I know full well that for every single hashtag NHL All-Star post, and then obviously either tagging Zach Hyman's Twitter account or writing Zach Hyman's name that was done, obviously his family were retweeting.
His dad was retweeting
His dad was very proactive in doing it, as was his brother.
Stuart Hyman and I follow each other on Twitter. He retweets anytime I post about him. So, I mean, a very proud dad, and you know he did everything he could to try and get him there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and especially, you know, after this season, you know, this it's like you say, you know, it's a breakout season. It's probably the season that's most deserving, and it's just a shame that it never happened. But to see him potentially reach 50 in his hometown against his former team with his family, who I will imagine.
I mean, Hollywood couldn't write a better script.
Absolutely. It's a story that writes itself. It really is.
And look, McDavid is always looking to set Hyman up, and considering the type of season he's having, there's no wonder about why that is. But I really think that he's going to be pushing to get Zach to 50 tomorrow night.
I would think so.
Every opportunity he has to give Hyman the puck in a good spot, he's going to try to get him, because that'll be something that he'll remember for the rest of his life. He's going to hit 50 goals anyway, and it'll be a great moment, a career highlight for him. But if he can do it in Toronto, I mean, that just makes it extra special, and I really hope that he gets the milestone tomorrow night.
Oh, absolutely. I agree as well. And you know, I'm rooting for him, and I'm wishing Zach all the best of luck in being able to make that happen, and for our boys as well, to make sure that we play a good, strong, all-rounded game. If we can get the jump on Toronto early, then great. You know, keep up the sustained pressure, make them work for everything that they can get, but make sure that we don't decide to take our foot off the gas and just, you know, keep a sustained pressure game and play for a full 60 minutes.
For sure. And because there is the bit of the rivalry there, even though they're not traditional rivals in the sense that they're not in the same conference, there is still a rivalry between Edmonton and Toronto.
Oh,
maybe
absolutely.
Maybe even more so between the fan bases than the players actually on the ice. Like, obviously McDavid and Austin Matthews have a rivalry as, you know, two of the best players in the game, even though McDavid is miles ahead of not just Matthews but every other player in the league. They are still two of the biggest stars in the game. So when you can have McDavid versus Matthews on Hockey Night in Canada, it will be the most watched game in the country tomorrow night.
Especially when you know the market's concerned as such, you know, have such rabid and passionate, you know, and you know, loyal fan bases. You know, even when the teams aren't doing great, you know, the fans stick by the team thick and thin, through and through. As far as obviously the fan base is concerned, I would probably place Felice, and I mean no disrespect to them when I say this, but three of the most probably disliked franchises as far as my beliefs are concerned, Toronto probably the top. So
they're up there. They especially for Oilers fans, they don't. They don't make themselves too likable to us with some of
we
don't have to go too far down that rabbit hole, but we all know.
Even to a guy from UK, you know, it's the center of the universe.
Yeah, Russ, you're an honorary Canadian at this point. and Matthias Ekholm also had two goals and an assist in the Oilers' 8-3 victory last night. And while he's known more for keeping the puck out of the net, he can also contribute offensively too. Russ, he's now been an Oiler for a little over a year. Has Ekholm had an even bigger impact on the Oilers' blue line than you expected when he was first acquired?
Yes, and not just only because of himself and what he brings to the table, but because of the fact that by acquiring him, it also made you know, Tyson Barry, Expendable, which yeah. obviously then brought Evan Bouchard to the forefront to then obviously quarter, you know, to be our new quarterback power play guy. The pairing between obviously Bouch and Ekholm is very, very sound. You know, they complement each other well. It's been more than beneficial for at least two players. Obviously, it's brought Bouchard's. You know, it's brought Bouchard's game to the very forefront. He's now the first Oiler since Paul Coffey to now score 50 assists.
Yep, and he's also the first Oiler to have defenseman to have 60 points. He's about to hit 70 points. He'll join Paul Coffey as only the second Oilers defenseman to have 70 points this season. Yeah.
Absolutely, and then obviously Ekholm's plus minus, you know, statistics—they speak for themselves. Just how very, very valuable he is on the ice with his defensive contributions, and even the fact that he brings a little sandpaper when it's necessary too. He'll drop the gloves. He'll get in your face. You know, he's a big dude. He's 6'5". You know, you won't want to.
He's our Viking.
Yeah, he is. He is our Viking, and he's. You know, even with respect to the Bouch bomb, you know, Ekholm's got a hell of a cannon on him when he wants to throw it. We saw a great example
of it last night. That was a great shot. And you know, in Ken Holland's 5 years with the Oilers, the trade to bring in Ekholm was arguably his best move as GM.
Absolutely, he's had
some great signings as well. Zach Hyman would be. I would say his best signing, no questions asked. But even bringing in Evander Kane, that was a piece that's helped. He brought in Corey Perry back in January. These are the pieces around the edges to support the core of the team. However, bringing in a guy like Ekholm, that is a piece that you can really add to your inner core that is going to stabilize you. I mean, he's come in and had such a steadying factor on the blue line. He's the Oilers' best all-around defenseman. He's been an excellent mentor for Evan Bouchard. He's made the team harder to play against in the defensive zone. You talked about the plus-minus earlier. He's plus 62 since joining the Oilers, which is the best plus-minus rating in the entire league since March 1st of last year. And I think he's really embraced the opportunity to play in Canada. He's talked about it in interviews how, even though he enjoyed his time in Nashville for 11 years, coming to Edmonton feels a lot more like Sweden. Even I've heard his wife, who they did an interview together, I believe in the summer, where they were talking about how much they had enjoyed being in Edmonton and, you know, being recognized by fans, because you could walk down the street in Nashville and be a little more anonymous. But when you come to a city like Edmonton, where the entire town revolves around the team, it's pretty hard to go anywhere and not be recognized, because the hockey team is that important. Everyone loves the Oilers. And for him to be such an important player on that team, it just kind of welcomes you right away from the start. And it's something that he didn't get to experience for the bulk of his career, but now he's getting to do it in Edmonton. And he's also a part of a contending team, which I think is probably the thing he enjoys most about playing with the Oilers.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I believe that when the summer came last season, you know, rather than when most players would return home, he actually stayed within the city as well.
He did, yeah. So, his child was born in Edmonton last year, so he has a Canadian son now.
Yeah, Leon, right? That's what he called him, I think.
So, I think, or I can't remember if it was the first name or middle name, but nice to honor a teammate like that. And when you think about what the Oilers needed, like they had a guy like Tyson Barry, who was an offensive-minded defenseman and scored some big goals for this team, was a key part of that historic power play. When Barry moved off and Bouchard seamlessly transitioned in, it in one sense was giving Bouchard an opportunity to elevate into that role, and he's obviously thrived since taking off, but it also allowed them to fill a hole that they really needed. And Ekholm, we said, I mean, he can still bring some offense, maybe not as much as Barry can provide, but his all-around game is so strong. And when you can have a guy who's a physical, steady defenseman and just cleanly gets the puck out, makes a good first pass, hits hard, adding that kind of a guy to the blue line is what they really needed. And it made the Oilers' top four so much stronger. I think that if there was one more piece that the Oilers would have liked to address at the deadline, it would be to get another top four defenseman. It was something that I'd talked about on previous episodes.
Yes.
If they could get this year's version of Ekholm, then I would think that their top four would be significantly stronger and give them a real chance to go on a deep playoff run. I still think they can, even without the addition, but it would have just increased their chances. They did, however, bring in a defenseman at the deadline this year as more of a depth option in Troy Stetcher, and he's slotted in alongside Darnell Nurse the past two games while Vincent Desharnais has been out with a broken finger. Russ, when Desharnais is cleared to return, would you keep Stetcher in the lineup over Cody Ceci?
It's a good question. It's a really good question. I've had a little bit of chance to give it some thought. I would say yes, and the reason why I would say yes is because with some of the recent games against Cody Ceci, has almost been directly responsible for some of the goals that have ended up being scored against. Another reason is because this last game against Buffalo was only Troy Stetcher's second game as a member of the franchise. And it would be nice to get all of our players going almost immediately and straight away. So then there isn't anybody maybe sitting out for too long a stretch. And I think it's been said, obviously anyway, that if this was the playoffs, then Vinny Desharnais would have been playing. But the fact that it isn't, we have a little bit of luxury and we can afford to give him some rest. And when you were talking about acquiring another defenseman like another Ekholm sort of deal, then the likelihood is, in order to have done that, we would have had to have made probably Cody Ceci expendable anyway. So at some point we might have to just try out a blue line in a world where Cody Ceci isn't going to be a realistic option, because at some point he may be moved on. So,
and look, we know how hard and how much of a grind the Stanley Cup playoffs are, and it's very unlikely that you go all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals just using your sixth starting defenseman. You're probably going to need at least eight defensemen, maybe even nine, on a two-month tournament like the Stanley Cup playoffs. So bringing in a Troy Stetcher gives them some insurance just in case someone does get hurt. And I mean, we are in that situation now where Desharnais had an injury and Stetcher goes from maybe being the Oilers' seventh defenseman into playing an everyday role for the short term. And I think that come playoff time, you could see both in there. I don't see Cody Ceci consistently getting healthy scratched. They are roughly the same age, but let's keep in mind that Troy Stetcher has only 21 games of playoff experience, whereas Cody Ceci has 64 games of playoff experience. And even if you want to say that he does make the odd blunder or gets a stick in a lane that deflects a puck past the goalie like happened last night against the Sabres, or he gets beat wide by a faster offensive attacker that leads to a good scoring chance for them, I think that he still can bring a decent defensive effort on a lot of nights there. He's not an elite offensive defenseman, and I think he probably is miscast playing that high in the lineup. But since we've seen the switch where he's been moved down to the third pairing and Desharnais has been elevated up, maybe that gives him a little bit more of a chance to succeed, that he isn't going up against the other team's top attackers every night. And we've even sort of seen the Nurse and Desharnais pairing be moved down to the Oilers' second pairing. Yes, Nurse might be the Oilers' highest paid defenseman, but really the Oilers' number one pairing right now is
Bouchard and Ekholm.
Exactly. So I think that Cody Ceci, like I said, is set up to have success better on the third pairing. That's probably at this stage of his career where he is going to thrive. And if you wanted to try him up in the top again, it wouldn't be ideal going up against a team like Colorado or Dallas or Vegas in the playoffs.
No.
They've been down that road before. But I think that sometimes he does get hated on more than he should, because even though he isn't the type of stud defenseman that you would like in that spot, he's been better than I think he gets credit for over his 3 years. I mean, in his first year in Edmonton, he was arguably the Oilers' best all-around defenseman for that year. And
yeah,
he scored a series-winning goal against the Kings in the first round that year in 2022. And yes, don't get me wrong, the NHL is a what have you done for me lately league, and we can't be too hung up on a big goal he scored a couple years ago. But at the same time, I still think that this team will need him in the playoffs, and they can't just say, well, you're going to consistently be a healthy scratch and Troy Stetcher's going to take over your full-time spot, because I think you're going to need all these defensemen. You might even need Philip Broberg coming up from the AHL to make it all the way to the final.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Obviously, Broberg would probably be in the wings waiting for a call anyway, because when it comes time for the playoffs to hit, we can recall almost as many of these people within reason as necessary. Obviously, with no worries of cap circumvention, because if the concerns are if Vegas can do it, anybody can almost do it. You could even recall Jack Campbell if it's necessary at some later stage.
But, he'll be in the playoffs. I have no doubt about it that Jack Campbell's going to get called up. And actually, I think that Broberg should get recalled late in the regular season. If there's three games left in the regular season and the Oilers can't improve their position at all, that they're kind of locked in a second place in the Pacific Division by that point, that's the time when you want to get Broberg in and give him some reps in the NHL again, because it's been a while since he's played an NHL game. And if he does have to play in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you'd like him to at least have played some games more recently now you're in a do-or-die situation where it's an elimination game in the playoffs and you haven't played a regular season game in 4 months. So I'm hoping that he's going to get called up by the Oilers, like I said, in April sometime, and they kind of just give him a couple games to get his feet kind of under him again.
Exactly, yeah.
It has been a while. And even though he has had some great success in the minors and he looks like, a top defenseman down at that level, he needs to still establish himself as an everyday NHL player. And with now that he's no longer waiver exempt going into next season, this will be his last stretch of AHL games. So you really have to make a decision on him. And this is the time for him to get an audition to sort of make that final statement on the team, because next year he'll either have to be a permanent member of this roster or they'll potentially have to move on from him in the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree with you again. So, so it's important to get everybody in and sort of their legs going, so everybody is as geared up as best as they could possibly be for what should hopefully be a deep and meaningful playoff run.
And speaking of the playoffs, just to wrap up tonight, the Oilers have lost to the eventual Stanley Cup champion in back-to-back years now. They've went to the conference final 2 years ago, and last year they lost in the second round. Do you think that this Oilers team is better equipped to go on a deep playoff run this year than in the previous two springs?
Oh, that's such a tough question, because we had such good additions at this time last year's trade deadline. Obviously, Ekholm being the biggest piece because he came with term. We had somebody like a Bukestad, fourth line said, it was big.
It was a tough one to lose. I wish Bukestad would have come back, but thankfully, most of the Oilers' core players returned this season.
They did, and obviously with the as far as the trade deadline this year concerned, is that we acquired three players without having to give away anybody, and as far as draft capital is concerned, which might not mean much anyway, considering if we win a cup, and it's supposed to be a projected fairly weak class anyway. So
I think you can include Corey Perry as an in-season addition too. I know it wasn't right at the deadline, but that's another
absolutely
player.
No. Just in the same vein that Evander Kane could be classed as the same as well
from a couple of years ago. Yeah,
absolutely. We got really really lucky. Corey Perry's playoff experience is going to be invaluable. Evander Kane's experience is going to be invaluable. Maybe some of these guys are literally saving their best efforts ready for a deep, meaningful playoff run. Do I think that we're as equipped? I'm not sure. I'm a wait and see guy, and we'll just have to see what happens as it happens when it happens. So,
yeah, I mean, you look at it like they have made some additions. I'd like to think that this year the team is set up for success more than the previous 2 years. They did go to the final or the conference final, like we said, in 2022. I do think that this year's team is better than that. You could debate which team is better between last year's squad and this year's. The Bukestad addition down the middle That was a big one for them last year, and it's a shame that they weren't able to bring it back. I do think that Adam Henrique can provide almost, if not more, offense than Bukestad could. He doesn't have the size or maybe
dominant
in the faceoff circle. But he can kill penalties. He's a good hockey player. He does a lot of the little things right. I mean, Sam Carrick coming in, he's looked really good so far in a fourth line role. And he's a player that I would really be interested in bringing back. I think he's going to be super motivated to play in the Stanley Cup playoffs for the first time at age 32 this spring.
Oh, absolutely.
And we talked about Corey Perry. He's not the player he once was. He's not the Hart Trophy winner that he was in 2011. But at age 38... he still can provide some offense. He's not completely washed up. This is a guy who still has some gas in the tank. And maybe what he brings in the locker room will be more valuable than anything. It's a guy who's been to four Stanley Cup finals, a guy who's won a Stanley Cup in 2007. And when you can have those guys, like a Duncan Keith when he was around a couple years ago, who've been there, done that, it just gives everybody a little more swagger in there, and someone who's been through the battle before. And I just feel like eventually it's going to happen for McDavid and Draisaitl. Would we have liked to have seen them in a Stanley Cup final by their ninth season? Yes. But I just have a feeling that they are so driven and so focused and serious. You look at the last two overtime goals they've scored. You mentioned one earlier in the podcast about when McDavid scored against the Blues, and the one we saw with Draisaitl scoring against the Habs the other night. They didn't really even celebrate those goals. They just snapped off the chin strap and were swarmed by their teammates, but it was almost just like, this is just a step along the way. This is
part of the
journey to get there. You know, we're just so focused on what we're doing. We're not even going to celebrate this small victory.
Yeah.
We're focused on the bigger victory. And I think that they are going to be laser focused come playoff time. And if they get to a Stanley Cup final, I just feel like the first time McDavid gets that opportunity, he's not going to let it slip away.
No, absolutely not. No, I mean, it could be said even as recently as even the season, not the season before, but the season back before that, is that personal achievements, they don't care about the personal achievements anymore. You know,
they don't, but it comes along with it. When you're two of the best players in the world, and I believe are the two best players in the world, I've said that for a long time, you know, they just... the points are going to come with the wins. That's just how it is. When you're that dominant of an offensive player, it doesn't have to be your focus, but McDavid is just going to win Art Ross trophies and Hart trophies because of how dominant of a player he is.
Yes.
It might not be that he has this goal set out on day one of training camp that I'm going to win the Art Ross trophy this year and I'm going to get 150 or 160 points. Yeah. But if he lives up to the type of player that he is, which he has done throughout his entire year, as much of a Herculean task as that is to continually improve on your greatness year after year, he seems to do it. He is going to achieve these things along the way to team success. Individual success is just going to follow it.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And it's like you say, so yeah, would it have been a more ideal situation to have won the Stanley Cup with Connor and Leon by now? Yeah, absolutely. But Alex Ovechkin had to wait 13 years. But
Steve Yzerman had to wait 14 years. There's no lock.
Some of the greatest players had to wait. You can't always get lucky like a Jack Eichel and do nothing with Buffalo for years and then
15
get
years for Timo Salani. You know, I can think of a few examples like that, right? Like, I mean,
absolutely.
Ray Bourque, one of the greatest defensemen of all time.
Raymond Bourque, is very, very
in his final
season.
NHL game, right? Absolutely. 22 seasons in the league.
Absolutely.
It's just, look at Wayne Gretzky. He won four Stanley Cups with the Oilers, played in another final with him. After he left Edmonton, in the final 11 years of his career, he made it to one final.
Yeah,
there is no guarantee, even for the greatest players, that you're locked in that you are going to win championships.
No.
But while McDavid and Draisaitl are both in their prime and that they have this strong of a team around them, I feel like this is the best supporting cast they've ever had, which is why I asked you, are they more equipped to go on this run? Look, 2 years ago, I don't think anyone was beating the Avs. That was a juggernaut team. Should the Oilers have won at least one game in that series? Yes, but were they going to beat them in a 4 out of 7? No. Last year, though, could they have beaten Vegas? Absolutely. It still frustrates me that they didn't, because I don't know if you agree with this or not, Russ, but if they would have got by Vegas, I think they would have beat both Dallas and Florida, and we'd be already talking about the Oilers with the Stanley Cup by now.
I agree. So, interesting little fact is that my sister got into hockey after sort of knowing that I was into it, and she actually follows the Dallas Stars, and we were actually kind of hoping that that was going to be the West. That was going to be the West final, because
in the late '90s and early 2000s, they had quite the rivalry.
Absolutely, So, I actually, funny little story. Actually, I was talking about that. So, I went to a pro-am sports, like one of my very first days here, and Alex Hemsky is actually drawn up the play that's the Patrick Stefan missed net opportunity, which obviously leads to the it's drawn in a Sharpie mark on the back of the back.
You know what? I think I saw their official Twitter account put a picture of that out.
Yeah,
when he was in for a signing, and. Someone had asked him to draw that, which is pretty cool. So that would be a nice piece of memorabilia to have in your Oilers fan cave.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But no, I agree. If we'd gone by Vegas, I mean, we could talk about whether, you know, did we overplay Skinner? Should we have played Campbell a bit more? Those are all debates
you could have.
Yeah, it's all by the by now. Yeah.
And look, some of the Oilers' best forwards kind of went cold in an important series, but how can you really get too upset at guys like Nugent Hopkins or Kane or Hyman when they were such valuable pieces to you all season? And if it wasn't for them, you probably don't get to that place.
Exactly.
You don't get that. So also, you're asking a rookie goalie who was thrust into a starter's role way sooner than he was supposed to have to go up against a Stanley Cup contender like Vegas in the second round and backstop the team to a victory. It just, he was put in a tough spot. And despite that, I still think that, you know, he did all right. He was pulled 4 times in the playoffs. Should they have started Jack Campbell? I think that Jack probably did deserve a start, especially considering the contract he was on. And we will likely see him recalled in the playoffs. Now, he might sit in the press box for the entire playoff run, but I'm sure he will be up here. And Russ, hopefully the next time that we talk, we'll be talking about an Oilers team that is either working their way towards playing in a Stanley Cup or has already won one. And it's been just awesome to chat with you tonight. So I really hope you'll be back on the show in the future.
It would be my pleasure. I've had an enjoyable time. It's been a blast talking with you and to talk about Oilers hockey.
Oh, without a doubt, man. I echo that. And can you just let everyone know if they don't already follow you, where they can find you?
Yeah, sure. I'm on Twitter. And it's at Russ Jericho Art. So basically, it's my name, and that's what I do. I'm a graphic designer. So it's pretty simple.
Okay, everyone, please go give Russ a follow. One of my favorite guys to connect with on Oilers Twitter now, and puts out a ton of great content. Russ, like I said, open invitation to come back anytime. Great talking Oilers hockey with you tonight, man. And thanks for staying up until after 1:30 in the morning to chat with me. But like we said, because you're used to these late nights, probably not that big of an adjustment for you.
No, not at all. Well, the UK is currently about 6 hours ahead right now, so it'd only really be about 7:39 in the morning if I was currently there. But no rest of the wicked. And it's all good. And let's go Oilers. Woo!
Let's go, Oilers. Russ, have a good night.
You too, Eric. Thank you very much.
So for Russ Jericho, I'm Eric Friesen. This has been the 99 Forever Podcast. We're out.